Members, we're going to go ahead and call the Finance and Facilities Subcommittee meeting to order. Today's November 3rd, and welcome everyone this afternoon. Cheryl, please call the roll to get us started.
Chair Yarborough.
Here.
Representatives Benjamin, Batana.
Here.
Bisada Cabrera.
Here.
Caruso.
Here.
Taney.
Here.
Duran.
Here.
Garrison.
Yep.
Hentschowski.
Here.
Joseph.
Here.
Foster.
Here.
Mello. Mooney.
Here.
Morales.
Present.
Persons Malika.
Here.
Salzman.
Here.
Stevenson. Tant.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you, Cheryl. Rep. Garrison, was that a yep or a here when your name was called? It was hard to tell. But we know you're here.
I'm here.
Yeah. It's good. Thank you. Members, please make sure that you silence your cell phones or turn those off during the meeting so we don't have any distractions. Thank you, Cheryl. I do want to mention before we move into our purpose for being here today, we have a special recognition. Our own Cheryl, who's here with us, is now engaged.
Yay!
So we want to congratulate her on that. So congratulations, Cheryl. And Hamp is your fiance's name. So yeah, so congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So members, good afternoon. We're joined today for our agenda topic today. We're joined by Tom Wallace, Deputy Secretary of Medicaid for ACA. Secretary Wallace will present an update on Florida Medicaid and an overview of Medicaid quality measures and outcomes. Before we begin, I wanted to mention Secretary Wallace presented about the Medicaid dental care outcomes to the HHS committee yesterday. And if you were not able to watch it live, it was very informative. So I'd recommend you look back at the video if you would like. So if you also, members, would hold your questions until the end. There are a number of slides, but if you hold your questions, and then we should have ample time to get those answered at the end of the meeting, at the end of the presentation. So with that, Secretary Wallace, you're recognized. Good afternoon. Thank you for being here with us today.
Great. Thank you for having me here today. Good afternoon, Chair Yarborough and members of the committee. I will be presenting today a little bit of update on Florida's Medicaid quality updates and outcomes. So, Chair, I know we have been presented in front of your committee in the past. We've provided an agency overview in the past. I think most of you members are kind of familiar with what the agency's mission and core functions are today, so I'll kind of skip through those, along with our agency's objectives. And our, just to point out real quickly that our main goals are to be cost-effective, transparent, and with the highest quality possible. And so with that, I'll kind of go into the presentation. I'll talk a little bit about the purpose of the presentation here, the Medicaid Managed Assistance Program, that's our MMA program, our long-term care program, and then some next steps. So what is Medicaid? Medicaid is a federal program through which states partner with the federal government to provide health care coverage to low-income children, families, and people that have disabilities. Medicaid was created in Congress back in 1965 as a Title 19 program of the Social Security Act. Each state's Medicaid program is different, so not one state is the same. And it has federal minimum requirements that must be met by each of the states. And they can choose whether to have a Medicaid program or not. All states and territories currently have a Medicaid program. Florida's Medicaid program was first started in 1970, and the last state to implement a Medicaid program was in 1980, and that was Arizona. A little bit of who we serve and the number of people that we serve. We are nearly 5 million recipients in our Medicaid program at this point in time. Of those 5 million, 3.9 are on our Medicaid Managed Assistance Program, our MMA program. 121,000 are in our long-term prepaid long-term care program. That's our managed care on the long-term care side. And then we have 4.1 of that 5 million are in our dental plan program. So also of that 5 million recipients, 2.2 million of those are parents, elderly, disabled, pregnant women. In Florida, 49% of all children are on Medicaid. All the births that happened in Florida, looking at calendar year 2020, 56% of them were covered by Medicaid. And Florida Medicaid covers 63% of all nursing home days. So since Florida covers significant percentages in populations, such as children and pregnant women, we have the opportunity to impact state health outcomes throughout the Medicaid program. So Medicaid is an entitlement program, which means that everyone who meets the eligibility rules has a right to enroll in Medicaid coverage, and states cannot cap their programs. This means that for services in the Medicaid state plan, like hospital services, both inpatient and outpatient, a state cannot cap either the number of recipients it will serve or the amount of dollars it will spend on those recipients. So once that service is in the state plan, all members are eligible for the service based on the medically needs that they have and are entitled to receive that service. This is just applies to the state plan, and states may place restrictions on who is eligible for the service based on things such as age and then gender. So an important thing to remember here is that services in the state plan must be available statewide in the same amount, duration, and scope. And a state plan service, when I say state plan, that is just a basic package of Medicaid services that we offer. Okay. So we have both mandatory and optional groups. The federal government requires that each state Medicaid program cover mandatory groups and then allows each state to have these optional groups if they choose. A group is a set of people who share similar characteristics, for example, a child, a pregnant woman, or a parent. And states must provide Medicaid reimbursement health care services to all mandatory groups if they have a Medicaid program. So that's in order to receive the federal share of the funds, because the federal government pays roughly 60% on every dollar. So once a state elects to cover optional services, the group is also entitled to receive Medicaid reimbursement for those health care services. And a service to each group are outlined in our Medicaid state plan, and sometimes in certain waiver programs that we have. So an example of an optional group that we have in a waiver would be we call it the Meds AD population. It's really our elderly and disabled population. It's a waiver type program. And on this chart here, you can see on the left-hand side, these are the mandatory groups, and then we have examples of optional groups on the right-hand side. Just quickly wanted to show you some historical enrollment over time and expenditures over time. Through state fiscal year 1920, those are going to be actual expenditures. 2021 through 2022-23, these are going to be projected expenditures based off more recent estimating conferences that we've had. You can see that there has been a trend of expenditures going up. Then also it's correlating with the increase in enrollment that we're seeing too. You do see a little bit of a drop off in enrollment going 22-23. That's what was adopted at the last caseload estimating conference. We are expecting with the end of the public health emergency at some point in time that may continue to drop or will drop. The federal government allows states to decide how to get the services they cover to the groups that they cover. And they do that through what we call delivery systems. And Florida Medicaid has two delivery systems, one a fee-for-service delivery system, and then a managed care delivery system. This little picture here is just trying to illustrate the differences between a fee-for-service delivery system and our managed care delivery system. First on, you'll see that the fee-for-service delivery system, this is where an individual providers are paid for each of the services themselves. So an office visit, a test, or some sort of procedure, the payments are made directly to that individual provider from Medicaid. So we pay that provider directly. There is no financial risk on that provider. On the other side here is the managed care side. This is where the state, so us, Medicaid, we pay the managed care plans a capitated rate to take care of that member, or it's a per member per month. So we pay them this rate, and that rate is to cover all costs associated, or all services associated with that member that they need for that month. And managed care plans are at risk for the actual cost of that service to that enrollee. The managed care plans do contract with a number of different providers to offer those services to the recipients. As everyone is well aware of, and I think we've talked about this previously too, that since the start of the pandemic back in March of 2020, we've had an increase in our enrollment. We have increased in enrollment by 1.2 million individuals have come onto the come on to the Medicaid program. So that gets us nearly to 5 million recipients being covered right now. This is just trying to illustrate what we looked at, what we look like in terms of enrollment March 1, 20 versus September 30, 21. So we have had managed care for quite a long time here in Florida, but until we implemented the Medicaid reform pilot in 2006, it was scattered and not necessarily uniform. Plans could pick and choose which counties they wanted to participate in, could withdraw from the county if they chose without any sort of penalty associated with them. And contracts between the agency and the plans were not uniform, and plans asked for special provisions, which sometimes were granted. If additional enrollment was optional for everyone, so they did not have to go into a plan. And then with the implementation in 2006 of our pilot program, we first had mandatory managed care in Florida. So this pilot was started in two counties, both Duval and Broward counties. And then a year later, it was expanded to three additional counties, which was Duval, Baker, Clay, and Nassau. So after the passage of the SMMC legislation in 2011, that's when we started implementing our what we currently have today. And in 2013, we first rolled out with our long-term care program. 2014 was our Medicaid managed assistance program that provides all medical and dental services to the individuals. Then in 2016, legislature passed directing the dental to be carved out of MMA, and the agency procured a standalone dental program beginning in 2019. So since 13-14, most Florida Medicaid recipients have been required to enroll in our statewide Medicaid managed care program to receive services, but no longer a fee-for-service model. And in 2013, that was when the agency initially procured the SMMC medical and long-term care contracts. And then in 2017 is when we went through our procurement process, and then we have awarded contracts for medical, long-term care, and dental services. That was all done in 2018. That consisted of three components now. So the first component is our managed medical assistance component, where this is the standard medical side of the house, doctor visits, hospital care, prescription drugs, et cetera. We had a long-term care service. This is nursing facility services, assisted living facilities, and our home and community-based service facility cost. And then dental. So all dental recipients now receive a dental benefit and are enrolled in a dental plan. And these contracts that we have with the managed care plans are six-year contracts going through 2024. Just want to briefly show you this here, so you can see that there are five types of different plans under five different types of plans under the SMMC program. Four of them are health plans, and then one of them is our dental plan. The four different types of health plans are: we have a managed medical assistance plan, that's MMA, a long-term care plus plan. This provides long-term care services and MMA services to eligible individuals who are enrolled in the long-term care program. We have a comprehensive plan, which is both long-term care and MMA. A specialty plan, which provides special type services for a specialized population of individuals, and then our dental plan. So our managed care plans operate statewide. They are done on a regional basis, and a plan may be selected to operate in one or more counties. And some were selected to be in all of the 11 counties. And then dental plans are statewide, and each dental plan does operate statewide, so in every region of every state in the state. So we used what we call an invitation negotiate, an ITN, and negotiated the final contract awards, which has allowed us to push the plans to the highest level of performance possible. So during these negotiations, we identified the highest level of service offered by the various vendors and asked all plans to rise to that level of the performance. Because of this, we've been able to get new benefits and services during the procurement cycle. And so this is just showing you the two different cycles that we've had. The first round was on the left-hand side, and then the second round, you see we were able to get a little bit of a better and richer benefit package, whether it have to do with expanded benefits or enhanced quality metrics, et cetera. So on these next two slides here, we have different tools. We just want to show you the different tools for measuring our performance and our health plans. So that the agency uses a lot of these nationally recognized and widely used performance measures, as well as nationally used tools to measure experience and enrollees, which are considered satisfaction surveys. So in addition, in order to ensure that we have data related to our key quality goals, we have some agency-defined measures we have created that the plans report on as well. These measures include HEDIS, which are the Healthcare Effectiveness Data and Information Set. These are the most widely used performance measures by our health plans, and they are used not only for the Medicaid population, but also for Medicare and commercial. We have the CMS Adult and Core Set measures. These are set and established by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, reported to the states, and included in the annual CMS scorecard for all the Medicaid programs, which we get this information in roughly around July of each year. And there are other performance measures that we'll go into a little more detail as we go through this report. So let's get in a little more detail now on our Managed Medical Assistance Program. So nearly everyone who receives a full Medicaid benefits is required to enroll in our MMA program, but there are a few exceptions. Certain people can choose to enroll, but are not required to. The largest group here are those that are in the iBudget program. This is the program that is run by our partner agency, Agency for Persons with Disabilities. And then there are certain people that are not allowed to be enrolled in MMA, or they're excluded from the enrollment altogether. These are generally those with limited benefits, like the dually eligible population, where they would receive the majority of their services through Medicare and not Medicaid. And then we have the medically needy program as well. That's benefits that they receive for a limited time, like on a monthly basis, so they are excluded. Briefly show you what the enrollment looks like in our MMA enrollment by the regions in the state. As you can see here, Region 11, Miami-Dade, Monroe counties has the highest out of the total, almost at 600,000 individuals, followed by our regions in Central Florida, Region 6 and 7. And then we also look at what our enrollment looks like by our managed care plans. We have 10 MMA plans plus 4 specialty plans. They're all shown here. And so this chart reflects all of that, as well as which region they're providing the services for. As you can see, our largest plan here is Sunshine at 1.5 million recipients. That's so high there, mainly, I just want to mention quickly that a month ago, on October 1st, there was a merger between Sunshine and Staywell. Staywell merged with Sunshine, so they got those members in there, so that's a reason for a large number for Sunshine. And we currently have 7 plans that are providing services statewide to all the regions. So the MMA plans cover all Medicaid state plan services, which is an exhaustive list of services, and includes a lot of these items that you see up here are what's covered. So you got acute care services, preventative and specialty and physician services, behavioral health services, prescription drug, transportation services are just a couple I'd like to just point out. Then along with those covered services, there are some what we call expanded benefits that are being offered by our managed care plans. So under our current contract, the MMA plans have agreed to provide these additional benefits through what we call the Expanded Benefits Program. There are more than 50 expanded benefits, and they include this additional substance abuse and mental health treatment. These are for adults, as the children's services are already being covered as necessary services, so they're covered, but the adults are not in the state plan benefit, so these are expanded. Alternative pain management, such as acupuncture and massage therapy. That's an alternative to opioids, for example. Doula services, additional vaccines for adults, such as flu, pneumonia, and shingles. You got additional over-the-counter benefits as well, and then waive copays. Those are examples of some of the expanded benefits our managed care plans offer. So each of the plans have a different matrix in the state Medicaid regions. So under the MMA program, we use several of the performance measure options, including HEDIS, CAP surveys, the child and adult core set, and the CMS 416 report to measure performance. For the current contract period, the agency also identified a set of focused program goals, and you can see those on the left-hand side of your screen. Two of those goals are focused on our potentially preventable events, which include hospital admissions, readmissions, and ER visits. And then we have our birth outcomes as well. We'll talk a little bit more about that as we move on to the presentation. So in MMA, we also have performance improvement projects, or PIPs, that are focused on these two program goals, and these PIPs are designed to achieve significant improvements and sustain it over time. We have our external quality review organization, that's our EQRO. They're the ones that kind of collect the data from the health plans and report that to us. So within the MMA program, the majority of the performance measures we use are these HEDIS measures, which I think I may have mentioned here. This slide contains those measures, and you can see that they generally fall into one of these different groups here. And there's five of them. So we have chronic disease management, pregnancy-related care, well child care, preventive care, and then mental health care. I want to briefly just kind of show you some of these metrics and how we're looking at them. So this is just a few examples of these HEDIS measures where we have seen some improvement in our program, pulling out at least one measure from each of those five buckets that I just mentioned and on the previous slide, and we'll just show you these quickly here. The first one is chronic disease management and comprehensive diabetes care. So this assesses folks that are 18 to 75 years of age with diabetes, both type 1 and type 2, who had a hemoglobin A1C testing. And the blue line is going to illustrate what has been reported to us on these performance on this performance measure through the agency by all the plans together. And then the red line is just showing a trend. We also have a pregnancy-related care, postpartum care. This is a percentage of deliveries in which women had a postpartum visit on or before 7 and 84 days after the delivery of the baby. These two are well child cares and visits, and the first one is at the first 15 months of the baby's life. So this assesses children who turn 15 months old and during the measurement year and had 0 to 6 well child visits with a primary care physician during the first 15 months of life. The next well child care visit is looking at children that are in the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th years of their life, and it looks at ages 3 to 6 years old who receive one or more well child visit with a primary care practitioner. We have a preventive care for children, immunizations for adolescents, and this looks at adolescents 13 years of age who had one dose of a vaccine, the Tdap and the complete human vaccine series by the 13th birthday. So the plans have to report on that for that measure. And then looking at the percentage of children 2 years old who had one or more blood level test. That was for the lead screening. And here's a couple more, just looking at adults' access to preventive and ambulatory health care, and then preventive care for adults' breast cancer screening. And then a mental health measure. And this is looking at assessing adults and children, so this is for both, 6 years of age and older who were hospitalized for treatment of selected mental health illnesses. So HEDIS measures have been utilized by the Medicaid program for a long time. We have required health plans to report on these HEDIS measures since early 2000s, with mandatory reporting coming in 2006 when we had our pilot program that I mentioned. So we have required the health plans to report on 29 different HEDIS measures, well child visits, immunizations, are just a couple examples of those. You know, this slide shows how Florida Medicaid program performed over all of its HEDIS measures in each year, so they're all being combined here. The statewide aggregate HEDIS score are measured against the national average each year, And this chart reflects the percentage of measures in which Florida scores at or above that national average. You can see the progress that we've had over the years after we transitioned over to managed care. As I mentioned, improving birth outcomes is one of the core program goals incorporated in our current SMMC contracts. And so we have three birth outcome goals, and the lower the number, the better. The first one is our primary C-section rates. So this measure is identifying C-section rate by region for Medicaid-eligible recipients who had delivery within that calendar year. And it's looking at the number of women who had a primary C-section compared to all the deliveries in that year. Next is what we call NAS. It's the neonatal abstinence syndrome. We measure this by looking at the number of eligible infants diagnosed with NAS per 1,000 live births. So again, it's just looking at the number of babies that were diagnosed with NAS compared to the total number of live births. And you can see that both these measures from our health plans are going down. And then we have preterm births. So this measure is identifying the preterm delivery rate by region for Medicaid-eligible recipients who had delivery within that calendar year, counting the number of women who had a preterm delivery versus all the deliveries in the state. So another one of our core program goals associated with our MMA program is the reduction of potentially preventable events. The fee-for-service claims and managed care encounters are used to identify all the PPAs, the PPVs, and the PPRs. And PPAs, the hospital admissions, which may have resulted from a failure to access primary care or a failure for ambulatory care coordination. PPVs are emergency department visits that may have resulted from a lack of adequate access to primary care or ambulatory care coordination. Both PPAs and PPVs are population-focused events and preventables. So we look at 2 years of data that are used in this analysis. The rate is calculated for the entire population, and it's broken down by per 1,000 member months. And you can see that there is a downward trend for both of these. And then here is the PPRs, a downward trend as well. And the PPRs are the return of hospitalizations within 30 days after the initial hospitalization, and so the initial discharge. And these are event-based preventables. And again, it's using a data set that we have. This is 1 year of data, and it's calculated per person who experienced an event. So looking at the screening and population ratios for the early and preventative screening, diagnosis, and treatment, we see here comparing Florida to the national average of the annual well-child checkup percent rate. You can see we are below the national average, but we do trend in that same direction. Nationally, we do not have that data yet in-house. That's why you'd see it stops at 2019 and not going into 2020. Now we move into what we call the MMA consumer satisfaction. So the measures we've discussed so far have focused on the health plans and how their providers are performing. We also look at the experience of the members within the plan, too. To do this, we use CAHPS surveys. These are consumer assessments and healthcare provider satisfaction surveys. And it's a survey that asks a member a series of questions designed to look at their satisfaction of that health plan. You can see here that in the most recent MMA CAHPS survey, overall plan satisfaction has been good. It's fairly high, particularly for parents and children who are enrolled in the plan. So the agency encourages any member of the provider who is having a problem or challenge with the health plan to contact us and reach out to us and let us know what the issue is. And if an issue cannot be resolved immediately, it's worked on with the plan. We track it. We trend all issues to identify any potential problems that there might be and how we can resolve it for the member. So some of the top kind of MMA complaints that we get into us from these calls that we get are on the recipient side, they may ask us, you know, they need help getting medical care, just in general. They just need help getting it. They need help enrolling into a plan or changing plans. and they have an unpaid paid bill, and they want to know if Medicaid should pay for it or should they pay for it. Then we also get contacted by providers as well, and they tend to ask sometimes, you know, have we submitted a claim? I'm trying to submit claims. They need assistance in submitting that claim, or they're trying to attain a prior authorization and need help doing so for that patient. So what we just talked about there was the MMA program. Now we'll go into the long-term care program. So under the long-term care program, these groups are a bit different than what we had in the MMA side. In order to receive LTC benefits under the Medicaid program, you must meet certain qualifications. If you do meet these qualifications and wish to access long-term care benefits, you must enroll in a health plan to receive those benefits. This makes you mandatory for enrollment. Again, certain people can choose whether or not to be in the long-term care program. And so this means here that if they qualify for more than one program, they can choose to enroll in LTC over the other programs. For example, if someone is eligible for both the iBudget program and the LTC program, they can enroll in either, but they cannot enroll in both of them. And then also under the long-term care program, anyone who does not meet the qualifications, so if they're 65 years of age, in need of nursing home level care, et cetera, they're going to be excluded from the long-term care program. Looking at the enrollment by region, again, just like on the MMA side, we see that the region 11 has the highest enrollment out of all the regions, then following by Central Florida, and then by plan. There are 7 participating plans that have LTC enrollment. You can see that Sunshine has the highest, followed by Humana, and 3 of these plans operate statewide. So the long-term care program covers both facility-based services, such as nursing facility services, and also covers what is known as home and community-based services, HCBS services. These are services that are intended to help the enrollee remain in their home or in a community setting rather than going into an institutional setting. These include things like homemaker companion services, home modification services, and respite care. Those are just a couple examples. There are also expanded benefits on the long-term care side, and I'm showing 6 of those here, just so you can have an idea that, so you know that there are some. You know, on the MMA side, there were over 50. We got 6 on the long-term care side. An example of one is the ALF move-in basket. This is like a $50 gift card that is given to the recipient, basically give it a basket to help them move into an ALF. So comprehensive plans and LTC plans are required to report LTC performance measures data to the agency by July 1st of each year. Plans were historically required to report on various agency-defined measures due to the absence of national standardized set of long-term care performance measures. Now all these plans do report on HEDIS and these newly created measures that CMS has created. So in addition, for the long-term care program, we have performance measures tied to another one of our focused goals, which you see on the right-hand side here, and that is related to increasing the percentage of enrollees that are transitioning from the nursing home into the community. So that's one of our goals, to get those individuals into the communities. CMS, in conjunction with Mathematica Policy Research and the National Committee on Quality Assurance, that's the NCQA, have developed a set of 8 long-term services and support, so that's LTSS measures. The first 4 of those measures that have been included in NCQA's HEDIS measurement for the past 3 years. And so Florida began requiring plans to report on these measures in 2019, so it's relatively new. So due to that newness, the NCQA has not published anything yet publicly that shows plan results or national means on the percentiles of each of these measures. So we don't have that data quite yet. So in addition, plans are required to report, you know, on these measures that are created by CMS in conjunction with Mathematica, so it's like a partnership there. The first year results indicate the plans are doing well and all the new measures associated with care management. So you can see on this slide that during the course of the SMMC program, plans provided LTC services and made great progress in increasing the percentage of the enrollees who are living in the community. So this is looking at the transitions from the nursing home over to the community. At this time, 65% are in the community. Prior to the implementation of the SMMC program, there were only 40% in the community. Majority were in the nursing home. You could kind of see the switch there. Community is the blue and the nursing is the red. So just like on the MMA side, we also have consumer satisfaction surveys done on the LTC side. So these are also HCBS CAP surveys. That's looking at the overall plan satisfaction and quality care ratings. They were high, if you can see on this sheet, particularly for the parents and children that are enrolled in the plan. So again, you know, we do have a complaint reporting system that the agency looks at everything and listens to all the complaints and tracks them. Same type of things we hear that we heard before. We hear on the LTC side, they just need help getting medical services. They sometimes submit a complaint about a nursing facility or an ALF or about a home health agency. This is a complaint there, so we'll look into that. They need help getting this information in general about Medicaid or a plan. And on the provider side, again, they need help. Long-term care providers, they'll need help submitting claims, have questions on that, and also trying to locate a service authorization for a patient. They'll ask us that as well. Okay, now moving on to next steps and where we go from here. As I mentioned earlier, the agency will begin formulating procurements for the next round of the SMMC contracts next year. So we're actually starting to think about that now. We'll move forward with that next year. As we prepare for this round of procurements, the agency could take several steps, including reviewing our current program structure to increase our focus on comprehensive coordinated care and consider strategies to increase the medical experience with our overall vulnerable populations and the quality outcomes. So new metrics can be negotiated as part of the ITM process as well, and we're looking at seeing what kind of quality metrics we can bring into the next program. As with all initiatives here at the agency, any change would support the governor's vision of cost-effective, transparency, and high-quality healthcare system. So I look forward to continuing this discussion with any of you guys and each of you, as you like, to fulfill our mission of better healthcare for all Floridians and identifying opportunities to work together to increase outcomes for Medicaid members. Thank you.
Mr. Wallace, thank you very much. We appreciate your presentation. Members, we're now open for questions. For Mr. Wallace, questions? Vice Chair Caruso, you recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Secretary, for your great presentation. Very informing. Informative. You indicated on slide 10 that the number of enrollees went up, I think you indicated somewhere that the number of enrollees went up about a million. Yeah, a million people from in managed care from March of 1 of 2020 to September 30, 2021. That's a significant increase in terms of percentage, considering we had almost 4 million, we went to 5 million. But what I don't understand is from that time period, we went from 32 million or 33 million to 35 million, a billion. 33 billion to 35 billion in terms of expenditures. I'm wondering if we increase the number of participants by a million or 20%, but our cost only went up, you know, a couple $1 billion, which is about 8%, something like that. If you could explain that.
Mr. Wallace, you're recognized.
Yep. Thank you. And thank you for that question. Yeah, we have seen a drastic increase in the number of people being served on Medicaid. What we do here, those individuals that are on Medicaid, they do get a capitation rate through a managed care plan. So each managed care plan is being paid a capitation rate to care for that member. some of these members may not be receiving a lot of services, but we are paying that capitation rate. Now, the members that are on the fee-for-service side, they're just not going to be showing up for services either, so there won't be any expenditures associated with those individuals. So that could be, you know, one of the reasons why you're not seeing that, you know, a drastic increase in the expenditures when you have that going up. But I will say, you can see on here, we went from the $3.81 million in 1920 up to a projected 5 million people in 21-22, going from $26 million to 34. That's a pretty decent size increase in expenditures. Okay.
Thank you. No further.
Good. Ranking Member Joseph, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you know, I have a few questions, one that wasn't on the list, but based on the slide that Vice Chair Caruso just asked about. On slide 10, it shows that the annual Medicaid expenditure is broken down by funding source. And in the current budget year and the next year, it shows 8.2 and then 9.4 billion in general revenue expenditures. Approximately what percentage of those general revenue funds are actually local funds provided to the state by local entities through the intergovernmental transfers, the, I think, IGTs, in order to draw down on federal matching funds?
Mr. Wallace, you're recognized.
Yep, thank you for that question. So if you're looking at that general revenue portion there, there is no IGTs in that general revenue fund. That is, IGTs do not show up there. That's general funds. General revenue. The IGTs would show up in the red in the state funding. So that's where the IGTs show up in that portion. So that's where we split it out between federal, state, and GR.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah. Follow-up questions? Go ahead, Ray.
So on slide 23, you talked about the breast and cervical cancer screenings. Can you tell us a little bit more of that program? I'm not familiar with it.
Mr. Wallace, you're recognized.
Sure. Thank you for that question. I can follow up with you and give you more details on that program if you like it and the number of people that enrolled in it. It is a smaller program that we have, but it is for women that are just receiving breast and cervical cancer treatments, but they are excluded from a managed care program. It's a high cost, you know, separate type program that we have, but I can follow up with more details on that if you like.
So would it be for treatment or for screening?
Ranking Member, you recognize.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. For that question, it does take care of the services for those programs for the breast and cervical cancer.
Let me ask the question again.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
So, screening or treatment?
Mr. Wells.
Yeah, let me follow up with you to give you the details on how that program works.
Okay, thank you.
Ranking Member.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then for the folks you had talked about in your presentation, still on slide 23. That for the voluntary folks that don't participate in the MMA program, it include disability, but I didn't see that on the chart in the slide. So I guess my question would be, both for the disability folks that you say are included as or excluded as part of the voluntary folks, as well as the folks that are actually listed on the slide, how are they alerted that they can participate in the MMA program?
Mr. Wallace, you're recognized.
Yep, thank you for that question. What I was referring to there, I believe, if I got your question right here, the developmentally disabled individuals in the iBudget program
that's
run by APD. So they're the ones that are voluntary.
Okay, follow up.
Sure, go ahead.
So separate from those folks, the folks that are actually listed in the side that are voluntary, how are they or are they even alerted that they can participate in the MMA program?
You recognize?
Yes, thank you for that question. They are alerted. They get letters and information to them that they can go ahead and enroll if they choose to.
Perfect.
One more?
Two more. Okay, thank you. On slide 27, you talked about doula benefits under the expanded MMA program. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, or should I meet with you separately on that as well?
Mr. Wallace, go ahead.
Sure. I can definitely provide you additional information on that. That might be better outside of here.
That is fine. And then last question, Mr.
Go ahead,
Chair.
Remember.
We were alerted. Okay, so not directly tied to the slide. Last session, the legislature passed and the speaker, you know, supported and chair supported, the HHS chair supported the program where we expanded coverage for women postpartum from 30 days to a year. And it came to my attention either last month or the month before that it still had not been in effect, even though it should have taken an effect July of this year. Do you know the status of that?
Mr. Wallace, you're recognized.
Sure, thank you for that question. Yeah, if you recall, I was actually here and presented on that, maybe one of your first committee meetings that you had. And I said at that time that we were still waiting to get approval from CMS on that, and I thought that we would be getting it relatively soon at that point in time. We're still waiting on CMS. We have not got that approval for that program yet.
Last follow-up to the follow-up. Yeah.
Last, so, go ahead, Ryan.
So can you tell us a little bit about more what the holdup is, or did they give you a timeline that they'll be giving you that approval or not?
Mr. Wallace, go ahead.
Yep. Thank you for that question. I don't have any indication of really what the holdup is. I do know that federal government is reviewing a lot of different proposals, a lot of different things that they have on their plate right now. I think it's just a matter of that they just have to get around to doing it. I don't have really more of an update than that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Sure. Additional questions? Representative Tant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the CMS approval timeline on this typical of CMS?
You're recognized.
Thank you for that question. It is. It's CMS, and CMS moves a little slower in the past.
Good. Thank you. Okay, Representative Salzman, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. First, I'd just like to recognize you and your staff and your team. Y'all have been so incredibly helpful to me with the Mental Health Task Force in Pensacola and just really being engaged in that process. So I want to thank you for always being available. You mentioned in one of your slides, talked about the satisfaction percentages and the complaints that you received. Do you guys ever compare that to the private sector to see where you fall?
You recognize, Mr. Wells.
You know, that's, thank you for that question. I don't think we have. And to my knowledge, we have not done that in the past and seen. I'm trying to think of how we can go ahead about doing that too. I'm not real sure, but I don't think we have.
Follow up? Good. Okay. Representative Morales, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Mr. Wallace, thank you for your presentation. It's been very interesting. It's a lot of information to absorb, but one particular question I had that brought my attention was on page number 9. If you look down, my district is pretty diversified, and I'm very concerned about the future of the community there. There's a particular area that I wanted to ask you, and if we can meet after session, would be great. Can you tell us what is the actual low income level acceptable and compared to the federal level? I mean, What is considered low income in your perspective? What is considered? And can you tell us also, is it the same for the disability people as well?
Mr. Wallace, you're recognized.
Yep, thank you for that question. I think you're asking for what is that income threshold on the poverty level. So each one of these groups have a certain poverty level, whether it's 133% of poverty or whatever that percent might be. We actually have a chart on that lays it out by all those groups, and I'm happy to provide to you and to the committee after this meeting.
Good.
Yes, thank you. I would like that, yes.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Representative Stevenson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was looking at the dental services because we did the carve out, and I couldn't see any quality updates on that plan. Everything I see is before we did the initial ITN. And I have had both before and after some complaints and concerns about, you know, difficulty getting services. And if I may just explain, my most recent example, I had a person seeking services that almost ended up being hospitalized because she had been accustomed to finding some restorative opportunities on a sliding scale basis and wasn't able to, and got to the point where she had no option other than having removals, and she so wanted to keep her teeth. And I was looking at our coverage. It doesn't even include cleaning for adults, and I know that that's hard, especially for older people, but for young people, it's hard to get a good job without nice teeth. And so I'm interested in understanding how we're doing on the adult dental.
Is that
That's the question. That's the question.
All right. Thank you.
Because of those kind of experiences. Thank you.
Mr. Wallace, you're recognized.
Thank you for that question. So yesterday I gave a presentation on the adult dental. So if you can go back and look at that, it details everything and all the performance measures that we have on the dental side. Happy after you look at that to reach out to me. I'm happy to talk to you after that.
Good.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you. It wasn't posted prior to this meeting, so I'll be sure and take a look at that. I have one other thing that I'd heard was an issue, that maybe since the plan split was some coordination efforts, and if we're going to go out to contract again, it doesn't matter to me whether it's in or out. It's just making sure that we serve the people, you know, meet the needs. And I heard that there were some coordination issues for people who, you know, in our very vulnerable category, who need anesthesia for the treatment, you know, instead of a local, for example.
So it sounds like the question is, can you speak to anything related to the coordination issues? Mr. Wallace, you're recognized.
Thank you for that question. What I can tell you is if the dental services were carved back into the managed care plans, now the member would be able to receive services for the medical and dental through one plan. And there would be the coordination between the one plan. One plan could coordinate the care for all their care, for all their services there. I think what you're referring to is maybe the coordination of care between the, now it's carved out, the managed care plan and the dental plan, and the talking between each one of them. They are supposed to be doing that and coordinating that care of that individual.
Thank you. Final question.
Thank you. I'd very much appreciate talking about that and kind of understanding what the difference of what my constituents are experiencing, and if there's just ways for us, if we're getting complaints on that, or if that's something that's really worked out, has worked out over time. So I appreciate it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Duran, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Secretary, for being here today. A question related to, and just kind of clarification, when I saw the graph with respect to total enrollment, and then I heard Representative Caruso's question on costs, it looks like at some point the 6.5% increase in FMAP from the federal government with respect to us absorbing some of the Medicaid, increased enrollment in Medicaid, that's going to be ending at some point. So right now, is it correct that if you enroll in Medicaid, you have to, because we're accepting that 6.5% increase, that they have to stay in the program? They're not allowed to be kicked out of the program right now?
Mr. Wallace, you're recognized.
Yep, thank you for that question. You're exactly right. So it's actually 6.2% instead of the 6.5% increased FMAP. And in order for states to receive that, they have to maintain enrollment and cannot disenroll anyone from the program. So you saw that slide where we have increased enrollment by 1.2 million people. We can't disenroll anyone. So it's just gradually each month and in each week, new people coming on without anyone being disenrolled. And they will be enrolled until the end of the public health emergency.
You follow up? Go ahead.
Follow up. Thank you. So public health emergency is officially ended, at least at the federal level, then that requirement. We'll continue to include that increase that helps absorb the cost, but at the same time, when it ends, they can be disenrolled or they're going to shift off anyways because they may have a job already that's lined up and they have the income levels just don't match anymore, right?
You're recognized.
Yep, thank you. Yeah, right now, if an individual calls up and chooses to come off Medicaid, they can. So if they get a job and want to voluntarily come off, they can. Other than that, they will stay on. But yes, they'll stay on until the end of the public health emergency as it stands right now. There might be discussions going up in Congress now that may change things. No, but as of now, that's how it works.
Follow?
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask a question. You had brought up performance measures that's prescribed in the contracts between the agency and the Medicaid plans. And I think some of them require the plans to meet certain standards, I think, related to case management, network adequacy, other measures that demonstrate their performance at the provider access and managing care for the enrollees. Just wanted to know, I think, what's the example? So there's an example, I think it is new providers are have to be fully enrolled in the plan within 60 days. How does the agency track compliance with these kind of MMA contract requirements?
You're recognized.
Thank you for that question. I've got a whole bureau. It's the Plan Management Operations Bureau that has the tracking of all the network adequacy for all the plans. So it's looked at on a regular basis. So I have all that details, all the stats on that. So we got a whole bureau that monitors and tracks us.
One last follow-up.
Sure, go ahead.
You're right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. So how is that information reported publicly? So, for instance, that 60-day for a new provider to be fully enrolled in the plan, is there a way that we're able to see that kind of data and information?
You're recognized.
Not sure that it's reported out there publicly anywhere to see if they're making that 60 days. I mean, we have it. You know, we collect it, so we know if the plans are getting it or not. It's something we can follow up with you on.
Thank you.
Thank you. Additional questions, members? Okay. I do have a few for you real quick, Mr. Wallace. We spoke in a couple of slides about the contract periods. I think at the beginning or toward the beginning of the presentation, slide 16, contract periods 2018 to 2024. On that timeline right now, are we already in discussions about the upcoming new procurement and contracts? Anything you can speak to on that?
So there's not too much I can say on that. You know, they go through 2024, the current contracts. We're in that process of trying to think about our next you know, round of procurements and getting ready to go for that. So it's fast approaching on us, and we know that, and so we're just looking at it all right now.
Okay, I appreciate that. And then on slide 23, and the ranking member asked something related to one of the groups on there, what caught my attention too, just on the topic of the residents of the ICF and the IID centers, I was making a few notes about it. Labor shortages are a concern as far as impacting access and cost for some of our residents, namely ones that have the intellectual and developmental disabilities. How does the agency propose to help providers who are having difficulty hiring frontline staff to care for these individuals, if you can speak to that?
Sure. Thank you for that question. There is, if you've seen this, you know, there is a 10% additional FMAP proposed for HCBS services. And so the agency is actually tomorrow at the Legislative Budget Commission going to be presenting to get some authority to have some additional dollars and additional authority basically to spend on things like staff retention and retention payments and stipends to HCBS providers who see these type of individuals and take care of them.
Okay, so that's if the commission approves, then my follow-up would be, how do you know a timeline of how quickly that would be dispersed to the areas of need if the commission approves that tomorrow?
Yeah, thank you. We are working on that timeline. We're hoping it's, you know, once it gets approved, we're going to be working with our stakeholders and different groups out there, other partner agencies as well with APD, to try to get this rolled out as quickly as possible. So I would say within the next few months.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that. And then any thoughts on what we should do as we get into the coming session as, you know, as to some of the needs out there for these populations? Anything we need to keep in mind or be looking at beyond what we've discussed?
Well, you know, you're hearing it. I'm sure all you guys are hearing about the shortages in staff. You know, the providers are coming to us as well on that. We're listening to them too. There's not much we can do here. You know, we don't have any additional funding besides this HCBS 10%. So we're going to take that in here. I think that's a good step forward with helping out these HCBS providers, and I know they're looking forward for that. And we're looking forward for tomorrow and moving to work with the different stakeholders to see what we could potentially do.
Okay, thank you. And my last question would be on the question was asked about the surveys related to both MMA and LTC. It has the percentages on there as far as what the feedback was, but do we, and I think it was mentioned per 100,000 when they come in, but do we have actual numbers of how many individuals completed a survey?
Yes,
and they were asked by the plan? Go ahead.
Yes, we do. So I can get you that. I don't have it here in front of me, but
okay,
yeah, we do. We have a tracking of how many people actually finished that survey.
Is it required that they do the survey?
We send it out to all of them. We do have measures of the amount of people we hope to get to answer that survey. Mm-hmm. So it's not a requirement that they have to meet that certain number. We try to get a number. It's out there. So we just I can tell you what the number is. Get back. But
yeah,
I just don't have any.
You can send it over. That's
okay.
Fine. That's fine. I appreciate it. Thank you. Members, any additional questions? Okay. Well, thank you for your engagement today. Mr. Wallace, thank you for being with us today. We appreciate it very much. Yep.
Thank you.
Informative.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good afternoon. Members, that completes the business before the committee today. So seeing nothing further, Representative Mooney kindly moves that we rise. We're adjourned. Thank you very much.